ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ऑफ भगवद गीता एज इट इज टेक्स्ट नंबर 8। नैव किंचित् करोमीति युक्तो मन्येत तत्ववेत् पश्यान् श्रृण्वान् स्पृशं जगृन् अश्नान् गच्छन् स्वपं शश्वान्। So along with this text 8, there is text 9 also. I'll just read the translation together with text 8. So translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: A person in the divine consciousness, although engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping and breathing, always knows within himself that he actually does nothing at all. Because while speaking, evacuating, receiving or opening or closing his eyes, he always knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them. Purport: A person in Krishna consciousness is pure in his existence, and consequently he has nothing to do with any work which depends upon 5 immediate and remote causes: the doer, the work, the situation, the endeavor and fortune. This is because he is engaged in the loving transcendental service of Krishna. Although he appears to be acting with his body and senses, he is always conscious of his actual position, which is spiritual engagement. In material consciousness, the senses are engaged in sense gratification, but in Krishna consciousness, the senses are engaged in the satisfaction of Krishna's senses. Therefore, the Krishna conscious person is always free, even though he appears to be engaged in the affairs of the senses. Activities such as seeing and hearing are actions of the senses meant for receiving knowledge, whereas moving, speaking, evacuating, etc. are actions of the senses meant for work. A Krishna conscious person is never affected by the action of the senses. He cannot perform any act except in the service of the Lord, because he knows that he is the eternal servitor of the Lord. So translation once again: A person in divine consciousness, although engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping and breathing, always knows within himself that he actually does nothing at all. Because while speaking, evacuating, receiving or opening or closing his eyes, he always knows that the only material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them. So in this 5th chapter of Bhagavad Gita entitled Karma Yoga or Action in Krishna Consciousness, Krishna is continuing to advise Arjuna that how from the level of a karmi, from a level which or a level of life which is just based on sense gratification, on trying to be the enjoyer, from that phase of life, how to elevate oneself to a phase of life wherein each and every activity is performed as an offering to the Supreme Lord Krishna, and offering the fruits of that activity to the Supreme Lord. So in this, he's trying to explain that how, even though it may appear that the activities of a karmi, that is a person who is not a devotee, and the activities of a person who has completely dedicated his life in engaging himself, his body, mind and senses in the service of the Lord, these activities externally may appear similar. A common man who is witnessing both these people, it may appear that both are working in the same way. What is the difference between both of them? But the actions which both the people perform, even though may appear to be similar, but the result that is going to be achieved is completely different. It is totally on the opposite side. Because the consciousness with which a person is working, that is what will determine what the destination or the result of that activity will be. So in this verse is a sort of trying to differentiate between a karmi and a karma yogi, that is a devotee of Krishna. So let us try to understand what a karmi is or a materialistic person is. Let us try to then understand what a devotee is, and then we will see that how the result of these two different people whose actions externally or seemingly appear to be same, how it is going to yield a different result. So who is a karmi or a materialistic person? So a karmi or a materialistic person is he whose activities in life is just focused around himself. Whatever he does, that is for his pleasure. And his life is based on the principle of Ishvaro aham, aham bhogi, siddhoham bhalvan sukhi. That I am the Supreme Lord, Supreme Master, I am the enjoyer of all the results which my activities are going to yield. I am the most perfected person and I am the strongest, and whatever is going to the result of that, that is going to give me pleasure, and I am the most happiest person in this world. That is his mentality. Everything based or circled around himself. For him, whatever work he does, for him that work is worship. He considers his work or working like a donkey to be an act of worship. And that is why you will find many of these people saying, work is worship. Yes, work is worship, but when? When we make our worship as work, when we make our worship as work, then our work becomes worshipable. Right? When we make our work as worship, then our work becomes our worship. If worship is not the work, then what we become is simply an ass. Why? Because that work no longer remains worship. It becomes barship. Bhar. Bhar means lot of weight. That weight, that bondage, that heavy weight, which is just going to bind you here in this material world. And that is the result of a materialistic person. He has no knowledge of what matter is, and he does not differentiate matter, and because he has no knowledge of something which is different from matter, that is spirit, whatever he does in life is just based on the platform of matter. He has no conception of spirit, which is opposite of matter. The only conception of spirit which he has is the spirit to work like a donkey and the spirit to enjoy. That is the only conception or the knowledge or idea of spirit which he has. He thinks to be the doer of his activities, that yes, whatever is happening in my life, it is because I am doing it. I am the doer. If I don't do this thing, if I don't work, my whole family is going to starve. If I don't work, my children are not going to be educated. If I don't work, this thing is not going to come. If I don't work, that thing is not going to come. That is his conception of a materialistic person. And he is so much contaminated with all this sense of I, me and mine that practically he leads the life of an atheist. Because when the life is centered around I, me and mine, then there is no conception of God. And in one way you can call these people as atheists. Because they don't believe in God. Because for them, they themselves are a God. They believe in their own strength. They believe in their own activities. They believe in the result which they get. That is the whole conception and that is the basis of their life. But against this are the devotees. And what, how do they lead their life? A devotee, he has a complete picture of what? A complete picture of who he is, who is God, and what is his relationship with God. That complete picture is perfectly before his eyes. And when any picture is clear before one's eyes, one cannot get deviated or lost. The person has a proper track or a route to its destination. If he has a map for it, then there is no chance for him to get deviated from this path. It is sure that he will reach his destination. Why? Because he has the entire map with him, the track he has with him. He has full knowledge of his own self and Krishna. And because his mind is filled up with thoughts of Krishna, whatever, and because the mind is completely absorbed in Krishna, he has made Krishna, or he has made his mind the sitting place for Krishna, whatever thoughts are generated from that mind are fully in relationship with Krishna, are fully Krishna conscious. And because the mind is fully Krishna conscious, because the thoughts which are generated from the mind are in and around, circling around Krishna, whatever thoughts, whatever instructions, whatever thought processes takes place in the mind, it is also Krishna conscious. And the mind is a seat from where the senses are put into work, from where the senses receive their direction. And because the mind is fully surcharged with Krishna, the waves or the instructions or the guidelines which the mind is dissipating to the senses is also Krishna conscious. And when such purified senses come in touch with the sense objects, when such purified senses come in touch with the sense objects, however notorious, however dangerous, or however alluring those sense objects may be, because the senses are fully purified, they have the potential to completely nullify the effects of the sense objects. And the union of this sense and with the, of the sense object and the senses is not, or does not give rise to bondage. It does not happen. Whereas in karmi, a materialistic person, a non-devotee, as soon as the senses unite with the sense object, the only thing, that pleasure which derives from that, gives rise to such a subtle form of bondage, that bondage is not visible. It is so subtle, and it is manifested in the form of happiness, that a person wants to unite his senses with the sense object more and more, without knowing that this process is yielding to more and more bondage, bondage and bondage. And here, as in the case of devotee, because the mind is fully Krishna conscious, senses are fully Krishna conscious, and the sense objects are unable to affect the senses, there is no bondage. Thus, such is the activity of a devotee. Therefore, this verse says that even though he may be sleeping, he may be eating, he may be doing so many activities, which may look as if the senses have come in touch with the sense object. So it may appear like that, but a devotee fully knows that it is mere interaction. It is mere interaction. The result of this action is just because of my senses coming in touch with the sense object. He has nothing to do with it. Why? Because he is not affected by it. As soon as a person gets affected by it, there is a bondage. But because he is not affected, the senses may go with the sense object. It does not affect that person in any way. And that is a devotee. And also, whatever acts such a devotee performs, the result is, or the motivation for such an act is only for the satisfaction of Krishna or in service of Krishna. Such are the actions of a devotee. And all these things, the results of all these activities of a devotee is ultimately leading that person to get more and more purified, to become more and more free from the contamination of this materialistic world. That is the power of a devotee's actions. So now, as Krishna mentions in this verse, that even though the person in divine consciousness is engaged in eating, sleeping, smelling, moving around, breathing, all these things, now a devotee does that same things, and a non-devotee also does the same things. Externally it may look same. It may look a devotee going to work, a non-devotee also going to work. He is doing this, he has his business transactions, a devotee also having his business transactions. So how does a common man understand that or differentiate between a devotee and non-devotee? It's very difficult. And that is how many of these people, when a common man sees a devotee also engaged in the same activities as a non-devotee, he fails to understand the devotee. He fails to understand that why a devotee is also doing the same thing. And there are a lot of misconceptions that take birth. But a person who is in knowledge, he understands. He understands that even though a devotee is performing some action and a non-devotee is also performing some action, the result is going to be completely different. Why? Because in the first case, a non-devotee is doing for his own self and he will be completely bound by the results, will be completely affected by the results, whereas a devotee is not concerned with the results. His only motivation is, let me continue doing my service and whatever the results may be, that is an offering to Krishna. If it is good or bad, whatever it is, my job is just to do the service. What is in my control is to serve, is to perform action. The result is not in my hands. That is up to Krishna. Right? So externally it may look same, but the result is completely different. A simple example is given, like a cat. A cat, when she gives birth to kittens, it is said that the cat moves those kittens to seven different places. So when the cat moves her kittens to different places, the only way she can do is to catch hold of those tiny little kitten, delicate kittens in her mouth. She grips them with her mouth on their neck and she carries them. And for the person who is seeing the cat for the first time, holding the kitten in such a way, they may get afraid. They may think, oh, the kitten may die. The kitten may lose his life. Right? And at other times, we may see when the cat is hungry, she may go here and there, she may aim at a rat, and she may be successful in catching the rat. And how does she catch the rat? In the same way. In the same way as she is carrying the kitten. But even though, now both these pictures may look alike, a cat catching or having a kitten in her mouth and a cat having a rat in her mouth. For a person who sees these two pictures, it looks exactly the same. But what does a rat feel in the mouth of a cat? It is a complete fearful, traumatic state. Knowing that now is the end of my life. This is going to be my end. I am become an object of pleasure or enjoyment for this cat. Whereas a kitten, even though that grip may be painful, but what does a kitten feel? Complete security. The kitten feels completely secure in the grip of the cat, the mother cat. She knows that I am secure. I am not going to be affected by anything. My mother is going to take care of me. So the materialistic person, the non-devotee person, their condition is like the rat. And for a devotee, the condition or the situation is like a kitten, completely secure. No difference. No, it's no difference. Even though it may be painful, but a devotee knows that yes, here is my mother, here is my father, Krishna, for whom I am engaged in so many different services, for whom I am taking so many responsibilities, for whom I am taking so many headaches, so many tensions, so many anxieties. Right? But for a materialistic person, because his center and focus is himself, his condition, even the cat may not even, the teeth of the cat may not even prick the body. But the moment it comes in the mouth, even it comes in touch with the lips of the cat, his life becomes completely miserable, because that is going to end the show of his life. Whatever he has, whatever scene, the picture which he has created of his life, that is going to be completely rolled out now. That is going to be an end of it. Right? But for a devotee, for a kitten, there is no problem. Even though it may be painful, accepted, but I am happy, I am secured. Right? And therefore we see the result, which is completely opposite. And this is not just a theory, like Prabhupada says in the purport, that although he appears to be acting within his body and senses, he is always conscious of his actual position, which is spiritual engagement. That is actual identity. At no point of time does a devotee forget his identity. And because he is always conscious of his identity, his eternal swarup, to be the servant of the Lord, therefore his service is just based around pleasing Krishna. Whatever he is going to do in his life is ultimately going to boil down as a service, as an offering to Krishna. And that which is not going to end up to give pleasure and service to Krishna, devotee does not engage in that sort of service. Because his whole focus is how my results are going to help, how my results are going to please the Supreme Lord Krishna. That is a devotee's activities. And therefore we see that all of our acharyas, many of them, right? And this verse, this karma yoga especially is meant for the grihasthas. And for the sadhus, those who are completely renounced order of life, for them it's not a concern. They may not have this question. But for devotees, those who are with their families, those who have their responsibilities, household responsibilities, they have their responsibilities of their work. For them, it is like playing a double role. They have to be a devotee also, and at the same time, they have to play the role of whatever they are doing. They have to play the role of husband, they have to play a role of an officer in the company, or whatever job they are doing. So in such a dilemmatic state, how can they maintain their equilibrium? This is very difficult. For those in the renounced order, there are only one role to play. No problem for them. But when you are out, when you are a grihastha or working outside, it's very difficult. How will you maintain your balance? So balance is taught by our acharyas who personally have implemented this principle of karma yoga, of performing actions and offering the results of those actions for the pleasure of Krishna and service of Krishna. They have demonstrated through their lives. And when they set examples, those examples become the role model for us to lead our lives accordingly. So one person, and Prabhupada was traveling in a train, one person just came and said, Swamiji, what if at the end of the life, at the time of giving up body, you realize that Krishna does not exist? Then what will you do? Throughout the life, you are calling yourself as a devotee of Krishna, you are working for Krishna, your whole engagements are as a service to Krishna, you are performing so many austerities, not eating this, not doing that, so many rules, so many regulations. But if at the end, you realize that Krishna does not exist, then what will you do? A common man would get bewildered. But a person who has full knowledge, who has full faith, full conviction that yes, Krishna exists, his answer was simple and clear. And what was that? So what? So what if at the end of life, at the moment of death we realize that Krishna did not exist. What is the problem? What is the loss? We have led a life of nicely eating, moving around, enjoying life, dancing, singing, traveling all over the world. But then you put the question to your opposite person, what if at the end of your life, you realize, now you pose yourself as an atheist, but if at the end of the life you realize, you come to know that Krishna exists, then what will be your condition? Your condition, or the condition of such a person, may be like the rat in the mouth of a cat. But for a devotee, because he is always enjoying, whether he is here, or after giving up his body when he goes back home back to Godhead, that time he is also enjoying. There is no problem for him. So such devotees are exemplified in our own parampara also. There are so many grihastha devotees. And the topmost of them is Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who is called Grihastha Paramhamsa. He is the topmost, the Paramhamsa among the grihasthas, setting an ideal example that how actions can be performed in full Krishna consciousness. Externally posing, externally appearing to be the magistrate of the entire state of Orissa, such a high degree, such a highest position, to be the judge, to have so many responsibilities, to go to the court, to fight the cases, and come back, having been married, having 11 sons. So from outside, external viewpoint, he may look like an ordinary materialistic person, a sense gratifier, having such a big house, traveling, such a person having such a high state that the government has to have a separate train right at his doorstep to take him to the office and to get him back from the office. That was his position. It may appear that his life is just for his own enjoyment. He's working for his own enjoyment and wearing such nice clothes, royal clothes. But all these are external for a devotee. Because he has that role to play, he accepts all these things, all these responsibilities. But when he used to finish those roles, acting in those roles as a magistrate or as so many other things, when he used to come home, what role he has? His original swarup, original role, his original role and swarup as a devotee of the Lord. Preaching, conducting so many programs, writing so many books throughout the night. Completely whatever his positions he had that was used in the service of the Lord for preaching. Because he had such a high reputation, people used to come, sit and hear for his discourses. People used to hear him. That is offering one's results. So many examples are there. This is just one example of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And even though it may appear like to produce 11 children, one may say he must be too much attached to the opposite sex. But when such great personalities produce children, they are not ordinary children like us. They are all pure devotees of the Lord. They can guarantee that the son or the child which is born out of such an act is a pure devotee of Krishna. And therefore, for them, it is an offering to Krishna. When they produce such children, that children become an offering and an object of pleasure for Krishna. Their service becomes an offering for Krishna. And therefore, they don't mind, they don't hesitate to perform such acts which externally seem to be materialistic. Why? Because their whole consciousness is, this is for you, Krishna, not for my own enjoyment, not for me. It's like having a hot potato in your palms. If somebody places a hot potato right from the vessel in your hand, would you ever catch it? Immediately throw it out. And if you hand it over to other person, the other person will feel that heat and will throw it out. It never remains in one hand. So similarly, a devotee, whatever pleasure he gets, he never keeps it. He hands it over to Krishna. This is yours, this is not mine. That is a devotee. We see in the life of
Srila Prabhupada also. Prabhupada, even though being in the renounced order, being a sannyasi, sannyasi means completely, renounced order means completely, given up everything, all material engagements. But in his life, at such an elderly age, you see, constructing so many big temples. To have your single house for a person who gets married, to have a simple one-room kitchen, it is such a big endeavor. He has to take so many loans, he has to get money from all these sources, and to maintain a single wife and a single kid is such a big effort. It requires so much anxieties, so much problems are incurred in the process. And what to speak of constructing such huge temples, palaces. And Prabhupada single-handedly used to manage this construction. Go into each and every detail of the construction work. And just, he didn't construct only temples. There were books which were printed in BBT, Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, keeping each and every account. If you see Prabhupada tapes, movies, you will find Prabhupada sitting like a big officer in his office, and his disciples, those who are in charge of BBT and respective temples, they are sitting before him, and Prabhupada is asking account of each and every paisa. Where did this money go? Why this money was given to at this place? Now, are these an activities of a person in the renounced order? No. Renounced order means completely given up everything. And there are people for outsiders, renunciation means not even touching money. Like one of the disciples of Prabhupada, he came to Jihu and he showed Prabhupada, see Prabhupada, here is a picture. There was a magazine of a sage, of some muni, who has clicked his photo in such a way that he has a table before him and all sorts of rupees, notes are kept. And that muni is sitting like this, no, I am completely detached from money. I don't even look at money, what to speak of touching it. But then Prabhupada called his disciples and said, get another camera, get another photographer. And not just get the rupees, get all the dollars and everything, whatever we have, put it on the table and click a photo like this, in this pose. And print it in our magazine. Now one may say, this sannyasi is embracing money, and that also not Indian money, dollars and everything, and huge table filled up. Common man may get bewildered. Say, what is this? Once in Delhi, there was a huge pandal program going on. One of the biggest, one rich lady of Delhi, she had organized a pandal program. 30,000-40,000 people in the pandal. And all of a sudden, one sarcastic fellow, he got up and he started speaking ill, passing some comments about Krishna and all that thing. And then Prabhupada, he basically was asking, can you show me Krishna? Have you seen Krishna? Can you show me Krishna? And the way he presented the things, Prabhupada completely blasted at him. Right in front of 30,000-40,000 people, huge pandal program, he blasted and shouted at that person. He got so angry, so furious, that many of the organizers, many of the big delegates who had come for that pandal program, they simply got up and left, saying that, here is a big Swami, how can he get angry? Sadhu means shanti. No reaction, whatever may happen. The world may go upside down, will not react. That is the conception of a sadhu which people have. Many of them left, and even the disciples, they also got confused. They also got bewildered. But why did Prabhupada behave like this? But then, Prabhupada, after the whole show was over, and it was like 30,000-40,000 people coming, the whole pandal program was arranged for preaching. And when all the people got up, people get bewildered. What is this? And even the disciples, they got bewildered. But then Prabhupada had to convince, or Prabhupada had to explain to his disciples that when you approach a sadhu, there has to be submissiveness, there has to be humility. Without that quality, you cannot approach a sadhu. You cannot approach a guru. Guru is not your father. Prabhupada said, guru is not your father's servant. Or he's not going to just fulfill your demands. That, yes, show me Krishna. Who the hell are you? What is your qualification? Even if I show you Krishna, you are the person to ask me. If you want to approach a sadhu, there is some process by which you can approach sadhu. Sadvidhi pranipatena pariprashtena sevaya. As Krishna says, upadekshante de jnanam, jnanina satvadarshana. Only with a submissive inquiry and service, when that sadhu is pleased, then he will show Krishna to you. But you cannot just stand all of a sudden and say, can you show me Krishna? And then the disciples were pacified. When the Vrindavan temple was being constructed, Prabhupada was counting the cement bags, keeping a track of everything. How many cement bags have come? How many bricks have come? Where the money is coming? Where the money is going? How many trucks have come? So all these activities, externally or seemingly, may look like the activities of a common man. Sitting whole night, translating books, traveling all around, traveling in cars like Rolls Royce. Once a reporter asks, Swamiji, you are a renounced, you are a person in a renounced order, and you are traveling in Rolls Royce, such a huge, costly car, fancy car. When what was Prabhupada's answer? Prabhupada said, what is this Rolls Royce? It is simply a car made up of iron tin. For if Krishna comes, will you offer a car made up of iron? No, when Krishna comes, you should have a golden car, golden chariot. And then similarly, for Krishna's representative, Krishna's pure devotee, you should also have a golden car. I'm compromising with this iron car. I should have a golden car actually. So even though externally all these are bewildering, right? But because his mind is fully fixed up in Krishna's service, whatever he does, it is just only for the pleasure of Krishna. Even when Hare Krishna land, the Jew temple was being constructed, even before the construction, even in the process of occupying the land, there was such a huge fight. Because that owner, the landlord, tried to cheat, thinking that these are sadhus, we can cheat them, we can get out of them, after taking 2 lakh, 4 lakhs of rupees, that time. But Prabhupada was like a warrior, he was fighting. Not in any way ready to give up that land. As if a person is too much attached to that place, you know, this is my land, how can I give? But why he was doing it? Because he had promised. When Radharas Bihari came, Prabhupada had promised to Radharas Bihari that, my dear Lord, my dear sir, you just stay here, I am going to build a gorgeous temple for you. So whatever a devotee does in his life, it is ultimately for the pleasure of Krishna and as an offering for Krishna. And because a devotee loves Krishna, because Krishna is the center of his life, and when you love someone or make someone as the center of your life, you always want the best for that person. And in the process of trying to give or offer best to that person, you may have to do anything. If you want best, then you have to pay any price or undergo or go to any extent. So devotee has that mood. My Krishna is topmost, my Krishna is supreme. So if I want to offer him something, that also should be best, is topmost and supreme. And in order to offer that, if I have to undergo miseries, if I have to undergo problems, if I have to behave like an ordinary person, like a non-devotee, like a karmi, then I am ready to do it. And devotee does. A devotee does. Why? Because that is an offering of his heart to Krishna. And this is a devotee's life. And because he is always conscious of Krishna, he is always conscious of his identity, of his eternal swarup as a servant of Krishna, as a servitor of Krishna, never is a time when he does not do anything in relationship with Krishna. Never. Because there is never a time when that thought is broken. Never a time when the break in this relationship takes place. It is like a relationship of a lover with his beloved. Just like a boy and girl, Prabhupada gives example. Just like a boy and girl, when they are in love with each other, the only thing, the only thought process that is going on between both of them is thoughts about each other and how we can please each other. And for them, even going to college, going here, going there, everywhere, whatever they do, in everything, they see their beloved. That is how a devotee relates with Krishna. Whatever they do, because they don't lose a track They don't lose their relationship with Krishna. Their acts are also not going any way out or within the purview of Krishna consciousness. And therefore, such a person, the result is, when he is here, he is also serving Krishna. And after giving up this body, when he goes back to Godhead, he is also serving Krishna there also. So for such a person, whether he is in the spiritual world or whether in the material world, it does not make any difference. Why? Because he is established in his original Swaroop, that is, servant of the Lord, that is, person giving pleasure to Krishna. That is his Swaroop. And therefore, such people, they are unaffected. For a non-devotee, if things does not go according to his desire, according to his plan, he completely goes upside down. People go on the verge of getting frustrated, fried out, committing suicide. Why? Because things have not gone according to my desire, according to my expectations. But for a devotee, no, he does not get affected. But because he knows it's not for me. I have done my best. Rest, everything is in Krishna's hands. If Krishna wanted this, it is manifesting. If Krishna didn't want, it is not manifesting. I am not in control. Krishna is in control. He is a doer. What is in control is my service. My attempts, my endeavors are in my control. But to get to Krishna's mercy is not in my control. It is up to him. When Krishna wants to do it, he will do it. And because he has this consciousness, he is never affected with the external circumstances. Completely dependent on Krishna. And therefore, to such a person, wherever you put him, he is always happy, always blissful, not affected by anything. Not affected. And therefore, such a person is called Karma Yogi. He is not simply a Karmi. Why? Because for him, those activities, those materialistic, seemingly externally, which looks like materialistic activities, that becomes yoga. That becomes spiritual activities. That becomes a cause of connection with the Supreme Lord. And once that connection is developed, then what is required in this world? Once you are always in connection with Krishna, then there is nothing to gain and nothing to lose. Because you have ultimately gained the supreme most of all, the connection with Krishna and his devotional service. And that is a Karma Yoga. That is a Krishna conscious devotee or a Karma Yogi who is following the path of Karma Yoga. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Anybody has any questions? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Bhagavad Gita ki.